Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Hare Krishna, thank you for having me. A lot of new faces. For those who don't know me, my name is Madhava Das. I live over in La Crosse, near Alachua. I work here in Gainesville. That's why I'm a little overdressed. But so today, we are reading from the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And the third canto begins with an introduction of some of the speakers. So, Vidura and Maitreya. Actually, the conversation between Vidura and Maitreya lasts the entire third and fourth cantos. As you have been learning, Srimad Bhagavatam is basically different conversations, primarily between Sukadeva Goswami and Maharaj Parikshit. But within that, we are hearing Shaunaka Rishi ask questions of Suta Goswami, Narada speaking to Brahma, Narada and Yudhisthira, Vidura, Maitreya, so many references of different conversations. Because when great personalities, great souls, saintly persons get together, their topics of hearing is prime, is what we really should be looking to hear. And this is the introduction of Srimad Bhagavatam. I'm sure you've covered that sort of a subject of how, what is our prime necessity of hearing? How do we connect to Krishna? It's by hearing, and we hear by those who are in knowledge. So Vidura and Maitreya, there's a history. Vidura was banished days before the Kurukshetra War. And Kurukshetra War, obviously, when we hear Bhagavad Gita, we learn a little bit about Kurukshetra. So Vidura was always a counselor of the party of Duryodhan and his father Dhritarashtra. But when they finally were about to go to war, again Dhritarashtra, having some conscience, he had some conscience that maybe we're not doing the right thing. And so he asked Vidura again, as he normally would, Vidura, what is your advice? And again, Vidura, as normal as he would do, would say, give the kingdom to the Pandavas. And so this was rejected again, and more strongly than normal, Duryodhan banished him, or insulted him so greatly that Vidura said, that's it. I'm through with this counseling because no one is hearing. So he went on pilgrimage for many, many years, actually. His pilgrimage lasted over 36 years, I believe. And he would go to different holy places. And then, again, just a little history. The Pandavas became victorious through the Battle of Kurukshetra, and they reigned for 35 years. And Krishna resided in Dwarka. And then the end of the Yadu dynasty came. And so when that happened, Krishna and Uddhava met. And in that meeting, Maitreya happened to be there. He was, and then, again, more conversation between two great personalities, of course, the Supreme Personality, Krishna, and Uddhava, his pure devotee. And those conversations you can hear detailed in the 11th canto. But Maitreya just happened to be in the right place at the right time. And so he heard all this. And so just after Krishna disappeared from the planet in Prabhash, Maitreya was there in Prabhash. Uddhava had just left as well. And that's when Vidura entered Prabhakshetra. And then these two great personalities met. And so there, Well, actually, Vidura met Uddhava just before this, and Uddhava says, actually, you go and speak to Maitreya. He was there at the time of Krishna and my conversation, so you go hear from him. So Vidura, just as you've heard Parikshit asking questions, my dear Sukadev, you know, what is the duty of a person who's, what is the duty of a person, and especially one who is about to die? And so Srimad Bhagavatam begins. And so similarly, Vidura wanted to know, he had some specific questions for Maitreya. And the beginning of the third canto, the first few chapters, goes over some of that. What is devotional service? How and why the Lord incarnates? How does he create? Why does he expand in living entities? How does he expand? And what are their activities? What is their engagement? And then finally, how can he see Krishna? How can he see Krishna in everything? So these were the questions. And so Maitreya glorifies Vidura's position, and then he gives some of the preliminary information of how creation is done. But then, after that, Vidura asks some more pointed questions. And so today, this verse is one of the answers to one of his pointed questions. So before we read this verse, we'll read the question so we have some idea of what the purpose is. So Vidura is speaking in the fifth verse. The pure soul is pure consciousness and is never out of consciousness, either due to circumstances, times, situations, dreams, or other causes. How then does he become engaged in nescience or illusion? How is he illusioned? And then text 6, the Lord is a super soul, is situated in every living entity's living being's heart. Why then do the living entity's activities result in misfortune and misery? So, how do we get an illusion? And even knowing that the illusion is misery, why do we continue it? So these are the questions. And then today we'll read the answer, one of the answers. How specifically the soul is illusioned, how he becomes affected by the illusion or illusory energy. So we can chant responsively. Yatha jale chandramasa kampadistat krito guna drishyate san apidrastur atmano natmano guna. Please chant. Yatha jale chandramasa kampadis tat krito guna drishyate san apidrastur kampadis tat krito guna drishyate san api drastur atmano natmano guna yatha jale chandramasa kampadis tat krito guna drishyate san api drastur atmano natmano guna yatha jale chandramasa kampadis tat krito guna drishyate san api drastur atmano natmano guna. Okay. Yatha, as jale, in the water, chandramasa, of the moon, kampa adish, Kampa-adi, quivering, etc. Tatkrita, done by the water. Guna, quality. Drishyate, it is so seen. Asanapi, without existence. Drastu, of the seer. Atmana, of the self. Anatmana, of other than the self. Guna, quality. Translation. As the moon reflected on water appears to the seer to tremble due to being associated with the quality of the water, so the self associated with matter appears to be qualified as matter. Please repeat. As the moon reflected on the water, due to being associated with the quality of the water, so the self associated with matter appears to be qualified as matter. So this is a nice, this is a visual example that Maitreya is giving us. And so we should try to visualize it just so we can fully appreciate his example. You know, picture yourself on the bank of a lake in the evening with a full moon. And go ahead and picture it in a later season where there's no mosquitoes to disturb you. And there's the water is completely still, and you see the moon and you see the reflection. Sometimes the water is so still that you can see the moon, and the moon looks exactly the same as a sister moon almost. But then if a frog jumps in, then immediately everything is disturbed, and the visual effect of the moon becomes gone. So let's appreciate that. Purport. The Supreme Soul, the Personality of Godhead, is compared to the moon in the sky. And the living entities are compared to the reflection of the moon on the water. The moon in the sky is fixed and does not appear to quiver like the moon on the water. Actually, like the original moon in the sky, the moon reflected on the water should also not quiver. But because of us being associated with water, the reflection appears to be quivering, although in actual fact the moon is fixed. The water moves, but the moon does not move. Similarly, the living entities appear to be tainted by material qualities like illusion, lamentation, and miseries, although in the pure soul such qualities are completely absent. The word pratiyate, which means apparently and not actually, like the experiences of having one's head cut off in a dream, is significant here. So here Prabhupada, he is bringing this verse, pratiyate, which we did not chant in the sloka, but it is of the previous verse's sloka, and that example of the head being cut off. So I'll just read the translation of that, which is the beginning of Maitreya's answer. The living entity is in distress regarding his self-identity. He has no factual background, like a man who dreams that he is seeing his head cut off. And again, pratiyate, it's apparently. So when we see a reflection of the moon in the water, and let's just say there's something blocking our view to the sky, and all we see is the water, and we take the moon as being the moon, but then it becomes flicker, it becomes agitated. So it appears, what's happening to the moon? The moon is quivering, the moon is in distress. But actually it is not. It is just appearing to be. It's apparently, pratiyate. It is just an appearance. The reflection of the moon on the water is the separated rays of the moon and not the actual moon. The separated parts and parcels of the Lord entangled in the water of material existence have the quivering quality, whereas the Lord is like the actual moon in the sky, which is not at all in touch with the water. So that's us. We're the separated parts and parcels. We are of the moon. We are of, we are separated energy of Krishna. We are of Krishna. But we are quivering because we have separated into an existence that is not stable. The light of the sun and moon reflected on matter makes the matter bright and praiseworthy. The living symptoms are compared to the light of the sun and the moon, illuminating material manifestations like trees and mountains. The reflection of the sun or moon is accepted as the real sun or moon by less intelligent men, and the pure monistic philosophy develops from these ideas. We'll go back to that. In fact, the light of the sun and the moon are actually different from the sun and moon themselves, although they are always connected. The light of the moon spread throughout the sky appears to be impersonal, but the moon planet, as it is personal, and the living entities on the moon planet are also personal. In the rays of the moon, different material entities appear to be comparatively more or less important. The light of the moon, this is a wonderful example. The light on the moon on the Taj Mahal appears to be more beautiful than the same light in the wilderness. So millions of people go to this Taj Mahal every year, every day. So many people go. And especially on the Purnimas or the full moons, so they can see this reflection off the marble. And this is very wonderful. But it is no more wonderful because the moon is spread everywhere. So whether the reflection is the Taj Mahal or the reflection is, a pine tree, there's still emanations from Krishna. Whereas one is being identified as very great and one is being identified as very small or unimportant. Although the light of the moon is the same everywhere, due to being differently appreciated, it appears different. Similarly, the light of the Lord is equally distributed everywhere, but due to being differently received, it appears to be different. One should not therefore accept the reflection of the moon on the water as actual and misunderstand the whole situation through monistic philosophy. The quivering quality of the moon is also variable. When the water is standing still, there is no quivering. A more settled, conditioned soul quivers less. But due to material connection, the quivering quality is more or less present everywhere. Shri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Stapitam Bhutani Swayam Rupa Padamayam Dadati Swapanantikam Namaste Girirajaya Shri Govardhana Namine Shri Shri Krishna Sanya Paramanam Dadayane. So this example that we are parts and parcels of the Lord, we have the quality, we have His qualities in minute portions. We are Sat, we are Chit, we are Ananda, we are eternal, we do have full knowledge, and we can be engaged in full happiness. But we have separated. Instead of being, using the example a little further, instead of being on the moon, being fixed on the moon, we have chosen to be on the water. And the water is an unstable situation for reflection or for anything, for a boat, a reflection, a twig, anything. It is very unstable. It is always moving. It is always quivering. So the spirit soul, when he identifies himself with this body, it is just like that. We are thinking, yes, I'm the Taj Mahal of persons. I am nobody. I'm so fallen. I'm useless. Either one is quivering. Whether you're trying to move yourself to a very high position, it is still unstable. Because what is the two ingredients or the two characteristics of the material nature? What was that? That's, yes, but I'm specifically looking for the characteristics. Somebody said temporary. Yes. Dukalayam asasvatam. Material nature, material things are temporary, first of all. No matter how many material things we stack up around us or how new they get, they immediately start getting older. And then they start decaying and degrading. And they're also a source of misery. And we may think, well, geez, I just got a new car. I'm very happy. How are you saying it's a source of misery? Well, then you, after 100,000 miles, then you then ask the question again. I just had to spend, you know, $1,500 on a new carburetor, a new transmission, whatever. So it's a source of misery, continual source of misery. And so the material nature is by character, by its very being. These are the qualities of material nature. So when we attach ourselves to these qualities and think, I am this body, I am this person born here, I'm an American, I'm an Indian, I'm whatever, I am black or white, I am man, I am woman, I am Democrat or Republican. All of those things, they are temporary and they're a source of misery. So, why is this, and this is the question again, let's go back to the question so we can better appreciate the answer. Why is it that the soul is attaching himself to this? Why is he feeling that he is this body? How is it happening? And in different places, Prabhupada will explain to us that it is our desire. Krishna ultimately wants us to be happy. And so this is our relationship with Krishna. We have this loving relationship with Krishna. And at some point we thought that we would be happy without Krishna. And so Krishna has made a situation where we can try to be happy. And so the material world is there for this. It's a testing ground for our to become happy, trying to become happy. And so again and again we are trying in one birth after another, or in one stage of our life or another, we are constantly trying to get ahead, to become happy, to manipulate the material elements in such a way that I can tolerate the misery that's associated with them. So then I can call that happiness. Prabhupada calls that happiness, it's like when in the old days, when a criminal was persecuted or found guilty, they would go to the dunking ghat, and they would dunk them in the water and come up again and dunk them again. And this was a punishment. And so the happiness of the material world is described as when you come up for breath and go down. It is flickering. It is, you could say, it is better than being in the water for sure. Because in the water you suffer. But when you come out, oh, there's a little bit there. There's a little bit of happiness. So we're not trying to be fatalistic, or we want everybody to be depressed and like, yes, everything is bad. No, I don't want to see anything. I don't want to attach myself to anything. So there's a wonderful insight of this that the devotees, the Vaishnavas, they have. Before I get into that, I wanted, we had a supplementary, verse to read, from the first canto. Is that queued up as well? Alright. I'm just going to read, the purport is very long, so this is your homework for tonight. is to read the purport.
No homework.
Okay, it's extra credit. Due to this external energy, the living entity, although transcendental to the three modes of material nature, thinks himself as a material product and thus undergoes reactions of material miseries. So again, we're thinking we are this body, we are this in this nation, or we are whatever particular set of senses we have and whatever particular modes we happen to be under, we are identifying with it. And when we identify with it, we every quiver that happens on this platform we're on, we're in this water, and every little thing that happens, we quiver. It's such a wonderful example, because that's exactly what we're doing. Whatever we identify with, you know, man, woman, black, white, American, Indian, European, whatever. No matter what, somebody says something, or Democrat, Republican, somebody will say something now, and you know, their party will all be like jubilant and happy that was such a good speech or such a good thing, and everybody else on the other side is quivering. They're like, their lips are quivering. Oh, that's so nasty. And then they'll shoot something out. And then they'll all be happy. Oh, that was such a great comeback. And then the other side is quivering again. So this influence is going on no matter what position we're in, whether we're human or animal, tree, particle. It's always interacting. It's the material. It's the quivering nature of the material world. And so when you look at this verse, those who, you know, some of our older students, what verse does this bring to mind from Bhagavad Gita? Prakrite kriyamanani. Well, Nimai Pandit, of course. Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvasha ahankara vidu vimudatma kartaham iti manite. The spirit soul bewildered by the influence of the false ego. So the false ego is connecting us to the matter. It's not just that we're forced into it, although we, you know, there is some of that there, but we're actually identifying with it. And we're thinking, yes, I am an American, and I am a such and such. And therefore, I identify everything American. I identify everything such and such. And so if this party is against, then I'm identifying that. It is a false sense of ownership of that designation. Spirit soul, bewildered by the influence of false ego, thinks himself the doer of activities which are actuality carried out by the modes of nature. So this material mode, the material world is almost like a machine. The modes are acting, and they're all influenced by Krishna's external energy. And so this feels like a very hard situation to become relieved from. But luckily for us, we have the keys to get out. And how do we first stop identifying with this? Now, I have two things. The class is short. I have this wonderful lecture Prabhupada gives on this point. And it's very long, so I was thinking maybe I would read that during prasadam, if it's okay, since I'm fasting. But in that lecture, he's breaking it down to a very simple understanding that, and he harps on this one word, pratiyate. It appears that we're like this. It appears that we're attached. It appears that we're embodied, but we're not. And so it is our identification. And Rupa Goswami, in his Nectar of Devotion, helps us with this. Sarvapadi vinirmuktam tat paratan nirmalam Hrishikesha, Hrishikena, Sevanam Bhaktir Uchate. These designations that we are attached to and that we quiver and that we become so disturbed by, they can be transformed. They can be re-identified. They can be, you can be relieved from them by, and using the same sense, we call these senses, material senses, these same senses, if we use them in the service of Krishna, Hrishikesha. So, yes, I'm identifying with this body, I want to eat. So instead of eating, we do service and we cook for Krishna and we offer to Krishna and we serve the devotees. And then those same activities, they become purifying. And so all of our activities can be like that. Purifying, if we engage them in the right way. And that way, we're no longer looking at the water. Because we're looking at the water and we're becoming affected by everything that's making us tremble and quiver, we finally look up and we see Krishna solidly, no quiver, just standing, just there. And we can reciprocate with Krishna in that way. And there'll be no more quivering. As soon as we forget that, though, that's why one of Rupa Goswami's main thing is, always remember Krishna and never forget him. So that's like it's almost like, wow, the first one covers it, doesn't it? Always remember Krishna and never forget. It's emphasizing that if we remember Krishna, if we see the moon of Krishna always, and we're connecting with Krishna always, then we're no longer affected by this watery existence, the quivering nature. And so, one warning, though, however, Prabhupada gives in this, is of the monistic philosophy or impersonalism, thinking that, yes, everything is horrible, and therefore, let's just make believe it's nothing. And that philosophy is called Brahman Satyam Jagan Mitcha. Brahman is good, it is eternal, it is real, that's real, whereas this jagat, this world, is false. And so Prabhupada, it's just a very short excerpt from a purport, and where in the fifth canto, prayers are being offered, and Krishna is being seen as the source of all countless energies. From everything, you know, I'll just read the verse. You manifest your different energies in countless forms, as living entities born from wombs, from eggs, from perspiration, as plants and trees that grow out of the earth, as all living entities, both moving and standing, including the demigods, the learned sages and the pitas, and this outer space, as the higher planetary systems containing the heavenly planets, and as the planet Earth with its hills, rivers, seas, oceans, and islands. All of this is Krishna's manifestations. Directly Krishna's manifestations. Indeed, all the stars and planets are simply manifestations of your different energies. But originally, you are one without a second. Meaning he's the supreme person. He's a person controlling this. Therefore, there is nothing beyond you. This entire cosmic manifestation is therefore not false, but is simply a temporary manifestation of your inconceivable energy. And Prabhupada's little comment here in the purport. This verse completely rejects the theory of Brahman Satyam Jagan Mitcha, which states that spirit or Brahman is real, whereas manifested material world with its great variety of things is false. Nothing is false. One thing may be permanent and another temporary, but both the permanent and the temporary are facts. For example, if someone becomes angry for a certain period, no one can say that his anger is false. It is simply temporary. Everything we experience in our daily lives is of the same character. It is temporary, but real. So, just to refute, as Nirvishesha Sunyavadi, to always refute this impersonalist idea. We never say that everything is false, but we see it as temporary and a source of misery. But it's still Krishna's kala, kali, his energy, his external energy. It is of Krishna. So how can it be false? It is how it is used. Rishikesha, Rishikena, Sevanam Bhakti Uchite. We use it in Krishna's service. Yukta Vairagyam Uchite. We use everything in Krishna's service. We don't reject anything. Therefore, we can use everything in Krishna's service. We can use a house. We can use the cars. We can use the iPad too. It's very nice. Is Yukta Vairagya on steroids? So, that's the main point. I do have this one lecture I wanted to read, which brings it in a very mystical almost way, in a very personal way probably. Actually, we have enough time. I'm going to start it, and then we'll stop for questions. So this, just a little background on this. Prabhupada is arriving in Tokyo, Japan, in 1972, and they had very few books there. And at that time, the second canon was being published by chapter. Each chapter had a separate book. And so they didn't even have all of them there. So the devotee pulls out the ninth chapter of second canto and gives it to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada, when he saw it, he was so happy. Prabhupada obviously loved to speak on anything from Srimad Bhagavatam. It didn't matter, oh, where is this section or that section? No, he was so happy to see that. And so when he began the talk, he wanted everybody to learn the verse. And the whole beginning of the talk, almost the first 20 minutes, is Prabhupada teaching how to chant the verse. And he said, this is very important that we learn these verses, we learn these words, because they'll help us. But then he gets into the translation. And it's a similar verse and topic that we're discussing today. And it's an answer. It is Sukadev Goswami replying to Maharaj Parikshit to an almost identical question. Why do the living entities come to the material world and why do they suffer? And so the translation is, Sukadev Goswami said, O King, unless one is influenced by the energy of the personality of Godhead, there is no meaning to the relationship of the pure soul in pure consciousness with the material body. It is just like the dreamer seeing his own body working. So the previous verse to today's, which Prabhupada refers in the purport, is just like when we are dreaming, we see our head cut off. And pratiyate, it is apparently, it appears to us, and we identify with it. I say, yes, that is me. My head is being cut off. Oh, my God. Who's talking right now? Your head. But that is not your head. You're identifying with your head in the dream, and therefore you're suffering. The Prabhupada says, so purport. And purport. The question of Maharaj Pariksha is perfectly answered as how a living entity began his material life, although he is apart from the material body and the mind. Prabhupada, it is a very important question. Maharaj Pariksha inquired. Many people inquiring. How the living entity was with Krishna, how he has become falling in the material world. And again, pardon me, this is not edited, so this is just transcription of his speaking. So if it seems a little choppy, that's just try to concentrate and maybe you'll pick it up. How he has become fallen material world. Is it not? This question is always raised? Yes. So this question is answered here, that how the living entity who is with Krishna became fallen in contact with the material qualities. So this is the answer. Read the translation. So again, he asked for the translation again. So that's cueing us that this is important to this question. And how does it relate today? So the very next question of how we're affected is, why did we get affected? Why did we come here to even begin that relationship? So again, Karandar is the reader. So he says, O King, unless one is influenced by the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Prabhupada, it is simply the influence of the material energy, nothing. Actually, he has not fallen. Another example is given. Just like the moon is covered with scattered cloud, the passing cloud. Have you seen? Everyone has experienced. The cloud passes. It appears that the moon is moving. Have you seen this? There's another example using the moon. When the clouds are going by on a clear night, maybe some scattered clouds, and if it's a little windy, you know, if you first look up, you don't recognize the cloud, but you see the moon. Whoa, the moon's moving. So the devotees say, yes, we've seen. Prabhupada, actually the moon is not moving. It is Maya, illusion. It appears that the moon is moving. But similarly, the living entity, because he is spiritual spark of the Supreme, it has not fallen. It has not fallen. But he is thinking, I am fallen. I am material. That is the reason. He is thinking, I am this body. Actually, the body has no connection with me. That is experienced. But the body has no connection with the soul. The body is changing, dying, but I am the same. The same example. The cloud is passing over the moon in a different way. The moon is far away from the cloud. It has nothing to do with the cloud, but appears that the moon is moving. Try to understand. Have questions and answers. It is very important. And then he starts quoting from the verse. Atma mayatam rite rajan. The illusory energy. It is the maneuverer or handling of the illusory energy of Krishna. The illusory energy develops when we forget Krishna. That is all. It is, in other words, this illusory energy of identification of me with the body is simply due to my forgetfulness. We want to forget. We wanted to give up Krishna and wanted to enjoy this material world. Therefore, Krishna is giving us. So, and then he goes on. He starts speaking about acting and drama. And he says, just like if you want, in a drama, if you were playing the part of the king, you cannot just, you know, get up and read your lines. You actually have to feel you are the king. The best actors are the ones who can really relate to their role. And sometimes they'll even do some very extreme things of going in seclusion and living that role so that they can really experience that. And so, when you're thinking like that, you're the king. Then you start thinking, "I am a king," right? We'll do that. So we're here. We're in the material world. Where, you know, we have these different situations, and the modes of nature are giving us and taking from us. And we're thinking, "Okay, this is what I have, and this is what I am." And so we get covered again. So the same point. Now this lecture is obviously a long lecture, but again and again, Prabhupada is harping on this fact that we are actually not part of this. We may think that, yes, I'm embodied or I'm fallen, but Prabhupada will say again and again throughout this that we're not fallen. We are just illusioned. So therefore, when devotees are purified in the Mahabhagavat, you will say, well, the Mahabhagavat, he has no material body. What does that mean? Does that mean if you take a knife and you cut him, he doesn't bleed? No. He is completely separate from that body. He has no identification with that body any longer. He is living with Krishna. He sees Krishna everywhere. And so, and again, the process goes back to engaging ourselves in devotional service, engaging ourselves using these senses, these body, the same body we have that we may be attached to, by using it in Krishna's service, we gradually will become purified and be awakened. So, it's 8:30. We can stop for comments and questions. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and if you quiver, then around things around you quiver, and then they're quivering, and they react to that quivering, and then you react to their and so it goes on. So it takes some energy, actually, some thought to see beyond that, to somehow or other, because we're all doing something here. We're coming together in this association so that we can, maybe when we leave this room today, we'll go out and we won't be so affected by the quiverings, our own quiverings or others' quiverings. So that's why we associate here. And, obviously, as soon as we start associating with other things, there's some influence there. So by being able to see this, practical application of what we're learning is to see that, oh, this person, he may be angry with me. Maybe it's something I've done. What did I do? Let me analyze that. But that anger itself is directed to this body. It's not directed to me. And I have this, actually my position should be service of Krishna. So let me go to that instead. Generally what we do, somebody's angry with us, we immediately think, well, wait a minute, that's wrong. I did not do that. This was my thought. And therefore, your anger spurs their anger, and so forth. Yes? What is your name? Okay. Hare Krishna. Yeah. Look at me. Right. Yeah. Yeah. So as soon as I'll leave this room, unfortunately, I'll probably forget a lot of this, and I'll immediately start thinking of, all right, who's doing this at work, and where are my employees? How come they're not here on time? And how does that? So it boils down to is how we're actually integrating that in our life. Why do we have a career? Why are we pursuing a career? Why do we have a job? And a lot of it is, well, personally, I'm not ready to renounce the world. I'm still, to some extent, we may speak these words that, yes, I'm not this body, but how much do we actually fully realize that? And so until we do, we are working with the body and working with a particular set of senses. So if we're a householder or, we need to maintain ourselves, then you need a career, and you happen to be in this country, you need this type of career. Whereas another, other places, you adapt accordingly. And so the career itself is not detrimental, just like, what was Arjuna's dilemma? Arjuna didn't just have a career, he had a career, he was a Kshatriya, and he had to face fighting with his own family members. And not just, fist fighting, you go your separate ways, but on the battlefield where death would be involved. And so Krishna is again and again influencing, you should fight. And so we may think, well, why is Krishna asking this thing, which seems so material to me, this fighting, why is he doing that? How is that going to help Arjuna? It will help Arjuna because it is what Krishna wanted. And so that's the main goal, is what Krishna wants. And so whether we're developing a career, we're becoming a student, we're going to get degrees or whatever, and then from there we go on to our lives, we'll branch out, who knows, maybe some will go and build other temples and create other temples. Or some will have families. And in the family, how can you support a family? You need a career. You need something to support. Or, you know, and each and every person will be different. Some people are able to do it in very simple ways. And some people, according to their nature, they need a little more. And so what's the key is that it's not simply work and then you just go back to the four eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. But no, that is minor to what you should be doing at home, should be doing in your own self-development. That yes, I have to study, you know, formulas and this and that, and I have to do that. But ultimately, what am I doing with that? Am I using it to help my family become Krishna conscious, or is it helping me to become Krishna conscious? We have to look at that. We have to look at what we're doing, and is it ultimately helping me? And so, therefore, it's always prescribed for householders. Yes, you get a job. And you do this, but you must have Krishna in the center of your home. You must teach your children to become devotees of Krishna. And you have to give facility for that. And so it's, of course, there's not just a blanket answer for every, you know, married person, single person. This is what the path is. It'll be different for each of us, but with the guiding principle that Krishna must be in the center of our life.